announced that we would be talking about Elisha. Now, if I ask you to tell me the major points in Prophet Elisha's life, could you do it? If I ask you for the five main incidents in his life, could you remember that many? What I would like to do tonight is I want to take this Old Testament prophet and make New Testament application. You remember, that's what Paul says the Old Testament is for. It's for our ensample, King James says, better translation, it's for our example. It's to bring us to Christ. It's like the bus driver. We get on board the bus and it brings us to Christ. It's called a schoolmaster. So let's learn from the Old Testament story of Elisha tonight. In 1 Kings chapter 19, oh, and incidentally, since we're more casual on a Sunday night and since we have no visitors, I'm liable to ask for some audible answers. You will not be usurping any authority by answering, and you might not be comfortable, that's fine, but I might be asking for some audible answers tonight. In 1 Kings chapter 19, we're introduced to Elisha. But we're introduced to him in the future tense. He is going to be a great prophet of God. He is going to replace Elijah. He's going to do all these things that God asks him to do. All of that is future tense, verse 16 and 17. We actually find Elisha for the very first time in verse 19. And do you remember what Elisha was doing when the first time we're introduced to him? Do you remember what he was doing?
I just looked at it.
Okay, that's all right. Even if you looked at it. He was plowing with 12 oxen, 12 sets, 12 yoke of oxen. He must have been a very successful and diligent farmer. This is also when Elijah, the great prophet Elijah, cast his mantle upon Elisha. Now that phraseology is even used today. Maybe the president of a company is being replaced by someone else, and the phraseology is he cast his mantle. In other words, Elijah is saying, you are going to represent me the way I represent myself in this life. We actually then don't hear about Elisha and we don't read about Elisha until we get into 2 Kings. In 2 Kings chapter 2. Now this is that exciting story when the prophet Elijah is taken up into heaven. Did I ask the question soon enough or did you find the answer? How was he taken into heaven? A whirlwind. Wouldn't that be exciting? That's verse 11. This is also where Elisha asks for something to help him. Do you remember what that was? A double portion, that's right, a double portion of his spirit. I think we interpret that a double portion of his power. Now, what else do we know about Elisha? As far as a physical individual, everything we learn about Elisha is found in 2 Kings chapter 2 through 2 Kings chapter 13. But during his lifetime, he did some amazing things. The first miracle that I could find that Elisha performed was the parting of the Jordan River. You know, that puts him in some very good stead. Some other great spokesman of God parted the Jordan River. That's 2 Kings 2, 14. Now, maybe it was because of that. It appears that it was because of that, that the sons of the prophets of Jericho acknowledged Elisha. In fact, this is where they said, the spirit of Elisha rests upon Elijah rests upon Elisha, verse 15. And they also bowed to him and acknowledged the power that God had given him in that same verse and chapter. Then we get to verse 19. We're still in 2 Kings chapter 2. And the men of Jericho come to Elisha with a problem. Do you remember what the problem was? Bad water. Every time I think about that or read about that, I think about Peach Valley when we first started going to Peach Valley. That water smelled like sulfur. It was bad water. Well, Elisha took care of that problem. And then he leaves and goes to Jericho. And this is, to me, I don't know, maybe the most unusual thing that I read of in the entire Old Testament concerning the prophets, at least concerning Elisha. He heads toward Jericho. He leaves Jericho, heads to Bethel. And on his way, there is a group of youth. The NIV says they were boys, young boys, and it sounds more like young boys than boys and girls. And they begin to mock Elisha concerning his God-given hairstyle. Do you remember what his hairstyle was? None. He was bald. In fact, King James says, "Go up, you bald head." And the NIV says, "Get out of here, baldy." Now, brethren, I think I can relate to Elisha here. He became angry, maybe embarrassed, but at least angry. Now, he had the ability to do something that certainly we don't. He put a curse on those young people. And do you remember what happened right after that? Two bears, King James says she bears, women bears, came out and mauled 42 of those young people. If you want a lesson on respect, there's a very, very good lesson there. Then he goes to Mount Carmel, then he returns to Samaria, verse 25. Now, not all of Elisha's power was in the area of water purification and getting young people's attention and teaching them about respect. He also had the ability to foretell the future. In fact, when you get into chapter 3, verse 17 and 18, he foretold of a flood in the land of Edom. He also foresaw Israel defeating the Moabites. But perhaps the second most familiar story in the life of Elisha is in chapter 4. Now, you remember a moment ago I mentioned those sons of the prophet. One of those sons of the prophet died. And it threw his wife into a dire straits. I want to read now from 2 Kings chapter 4. A certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, saying, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that he feared the Lord, and the creditor is coming to take my two sons as his slaves." She didn't have the money. Her husband passed away. Boy, they lived in a terrible society. Her creditors were going to come and take her sons and make them slaves. Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? What can I do to help you out? Tell me, what do you have in your house?" And she said, "I have nothing in the house but a jar of oil." That's all she had, a jar of oil. Elisha said, "Go borrow jars from everywhere, from your neighbors, empty jars. Do not gather just a few. Get just as many of these empty jars as you possibly can. And when you have them, shut the door behind you and your sons and pour your oil." You remember she only had one jar of oil. "Pour your oil into those jars, and when they are full, set them aside." Now, the picture I get, when that first jar is full, she set it aside. She started filling a second jar. When it was full, she set it aside. Third, fourth, fifth, however many she had. "Now, it came to pass," this is verse 6, "when the jars were full, that she said to her sons, 'Bring me another jar.' And they said to her, 'There are no more jars.'" Verse 7, "Then she came and told Elisha, and he said," and I'm going to paraphrase just a bit as we go, "Now take all of those jars of oil and sell them. You'll be able to pay off all your debts, and that will be enough even for you and your sons to live off the rest of your life." Isn't that a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful story? Now, another interesting story begins in verse 8. This time, and I never can pronounce the word, I don't think correctly, but Elisha, as the prophet of God, does a lot of traveling. He's down in Shunem, And there is a particular lady. Oh, and we heard of Shunem way back in Joshua 19. This was part of the land. That was a city, a part of the land that was given to Issachar, the tribe of Issachar. Well, anyway, he's down in Shunem. And the King James says a notable woman, a wealthy woman there in Shunem, told him that every time he passed through, that if he would stop, she'd have a meal for him. He's always welcome to stop, and she would have a meal for him. And this he did. Well, that seemed to go along so well that she asked her husband if they could build a room either on top of the wall, near the wall, somehow. It was an upper room, however. If they could build a room for Elisha, they put a bed in it and some other furniture. And then she said, every time you come through, if you're tired, you want to take a nap, you want to spend the night, whatever the case may be, then you're welcome to stay in that room. Well, one day, Elisha was resting in that upper room. And it seems that he decides that he wants to do something nice for this Shunammite woman. And so he asked her, I guess, what can I do? And this was her response. Verse 13, she wanted to dwell among her own people. Now, if you dig into that phraseology a little bit more, you're going to realize she wasn't talking about just the people of that town. She was talking about family. She was talking about family. You remember this morning we mentioned Ruth. When Ruth's husband died, Naomi tried to convince her to go back to Moab, go back to her own people. That's really what she's trying to say. She's talking about she wants to live with her family the rest of her life. The problem was her husband was old, and she didn't have a male heir. Now, I don't want this to be taken politically incorrect, but the society of the Jews at that particular time, or the society at that particular time, was very male dominated. So there was the patriarch, that would be her husband. He's the head of the household. If they had a plurality of children, the oldest son then would be given the birthright. That's a double portion, but he also becomes the patriarch of the family. This is where it doesn't really sound good. The daughters would be married off to other families, you know, and they would become then those people's family. But she has no son. And when her husband dies, she'll be all alone. She won't have any family. So I think one of the most touching things that Elisha does, he says, when I see you again, or this time next year, I think that's what he said, this night, time next year, you will be, I love the King James terminology, embracing a son. You'll have your own son. And sure enough, the Bible says that she conceived and bore a son. It was not by a handmaiden. It was not by a servant. It was actually her son. Now, a sub-note to that is, later, that son died. And what did Elisha do? Brought him back to life. So she was able to live with her family. Now, I want to get to application, and time is already catching us. So we're not going to be able to discuss much of Elisha's life in the rest of our time because I want to make the application. But I encourage you to read this story. Hasn't your curiosity been whetted already? Don't you realize what a wonderful lesson this is? And let's try to make some application. But this is what you're going to find out. He must have been a culinary expert because on one occasion he purified some stew, that's 2 Kings chapter 4. You're going to find where he miraculously provided food for 100 people. King James says men, and I think it was probably men. And do you remember what he gave them? Barley loaves. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? And there was even some leftovers, some remnants. That sounds familiar also. In chapter 5, we're going to learn about Naaman. Now, I've probably preached a dozen sermons about Naaman in the time that I've been here. I bet you've heard 100 more. So we're not going to talk about Naaman, but who was Naaman? What was his position and where was he from? Pardon? A commander of the army, the Syrian army. And what was his physical malady? Leprosy. Leprosy. He had leprosy and he wanted to be cured. I would too. But he had to do it God's way. That's the lesson of Naaman. We've heard that so many times. Then in chapter 6, we find where something floated. Do you remember what it was? An axe head. I'd like to have been there to see that. And then he gives other prophecies. He has other visions. My favorite story is found in 2 Kings chapter 6. This is when the Syrian army surrounds the town of Dothan, where Elisha and his servant are. And his servant bursts in that next morning. He says, Elisha, our city is surrounded by the enemy. What are we going to do? And you remember what Elisha said? He prayed to God, open his eyes, and let him see the help that is here for us. And God did open his eyes. He was able to see hosts of God's elect, whether we call them angels or not, it really doesn't matter. They were surrounded by soldiers and chariots, and therefore he was going to take care of them with that. Now, what did we learn about Elisha, or at least from the story about Elisha? What is the application that we can make today? Well, first of all, God cares for his people. And God especially cares for his faithful people. We learn that in several of the miracles that Elisha performed, the increase of the widow's oil, the woman who needed a son. The son died. He even restored the son. But God still allowed his people to be tested. Brethren, you and I are not immune from testing. Now, God does not tempt us, but God does allow our faith to be tested. He did even Elisha's faith. He did the faith of the people Elisha dealt with. He will allow our faith to be tested. And that's why we need to rely on verses like where Peter said in 1 Peter 5:7, we need to cast all our care upon God. God cares for us. We also learned that God preserves his people. The sweetening of the water of Jericho, the flood, the victory over the Edomites and the Samaritans. Again, Peter says, 2 Peter 2:9, the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation and to reserve the unjust until the day of judgment. And I love Psalm 34:17, the righteous cry out, and the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. What else do we learn? God is in control. With God's help, they were able to defeat the powerful Moabites. They were able to defeat the even more powerful Syrians. I'm not saying that God will help us in our physical battles, but he will help us in our spiritual battles. There are no powers on earth or anywhere else that God will not help us defeat. Daniel 4:32, the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he will. Romans 13:1, let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there is no power but God, the powers that are ordained of God. God also demands obedience. We mentioned Naaman. Had Naaman not done what Elisha told him, I guess he would have died a leper. I'm sure that he would have. We have to do what God tells us to do. Now, some people say, well, God loves us so much, he would never condemn us. Well, he will if we don't do what he tells us to do. How do we know that? Because that's what he told us. He told us we need to be faithful. Hebrews 5:9, and be made perfect. Jesus became the author of eternal salvation to all those that obey him. From the life of Elisha, we also learn that God will punish the evildoers. We also learn that God encourages us through his word. Brethren, what should we say then? If God be for us, it doesn't matter who's against us, because God is for us. And finally, God keeps his promises. He did with Elisha, he will with us. Now, what is the greatest promise God has given us? Heaven. You know, Moses said we're going to Canaan, and they went, and they received Canaan. But that was not really a blessing more than they deserve. They deserve that. But brethren, heaven is for us. That's the promise that God has given us. And God is not slack concerning his promises. He's not lazy concerning his promises, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering to usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all of us, all of the world, should come to repentance. And it is our responsibility to let the world know that. Well, I really enjoyed studying the life of Elisha. I hope you did too. I hope you will even study it more following tonight. The invitation is to be extended. I mentioned number 620, let me get to that. Sunlight, we'll be singing that. If you need to